Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.
Great to be diving into the material again.
Today, we're opening a file on a term that initially sent us, well, on a bit of a wild goose chase online.
Oh, I remember that.
You know that feeling? You're searching for something specific, maybe for research, and just slight difference in spelling throws you completely off track.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what happened when we started looking for Stanbeige. S-T-A-N-B-E-J.
Right. And the material we reviewed makes it clear just how odd those initial results were.
They really were. We found, what was it, a specific brand of black leather sandals.
Sandals, yes. And wasn't there something in an old Italian text?
Uh-huh. On animal magnetism, of all things?
Yeah.
A footnote mentioning Stanbeige connected to, like, spiritual entities?
Sandals and spiritualism, quite the detour from Kurdish culture.
Definitely.
It's actually a perfect, maybe slightly funny example of how vital precise terminology is, isn't it? Especially with specific cultural traditions.
It really is. A tiny variance can send you way off course.
But thankfully, by moving past that initial confusion and focusing on the correct term,
The material we've collected reveals someone incredibly important. The Stanbeige.
Exactly. And that's our focus for this archive session. We want to pull out the key insights from the material we've examined.
Understand who the Stanbeige is, their vital role in Kurdish culture, the oral tradition.
What their music is like, their history, how they've adapted.
And the very real challenges they still face.
Yeah.
And importantly, everything we discuss comes only from the information in the material we've reviewed.
Right. No outside speculation.
So let's start with the name itself, as the sources really emphasize getting it right.
Okay.
The correct term is Stanbeige. That's S-T-R-A-N-B-E-J, pronounced roughly Stanbeige.
Stanbeige, got it. That's the term we'll stick to.
And this is the specific figure we're focusing on, based on our sources.
So where does the word come from? Let's unpack it a bit.
Okay. It's from Kurmanji Kurdish, the dialect mostly spoken in northern Kurdistan.
Kurmanji, right.
And Stanbeige is a compound word. It combines Stran.
Which means?
Stran means song.
Okay.
And it's joined with the suffix beige. This comes from the verb bejin, meaning to say or to tell or even to sing.
Ah, so literally a song sayer or someone who tells songs. That's quite evocative.
It really is. It speaks directly to what they do.
And the sources mention other related terms.
Yes, definitely. In Kurmanji, kilam is another common word for song.
Okay.
So you also find the term kilambeige, which is basically a synonym for stranbeige.
Kilambeige, right.
And the actual act of singing. The verb is dirin.
Dirin.
And the art form, the practice itself, is called Stanbeige.
Stanbeige. It's helpful to have those distinctions.
And importantly, as the sources point out, these terms can differ depending on the dialect.
Right. Linguistic precision is key here.
Absolutely. While Stanbeige is the Kurmanji term we're focusing on, if you were in Sorani-speaking areas...
Like southern or eastern Kurdistan?
Exactly. You might hear similar figures called Shayir, or perhaps... A Gurganbeige?
Gurganbeige.
Yes, because Gurani is the Sorani word for song.
Ah, okay. So recognizing these differences as the material highlights helps us place the Stanbeige correctly, culturally, and linguistically.
Precisely.
So moving beyond just the name, the material makes it really clear. The Stanbeige is much more than just a singer or an entertainer.
Oh, absolutely. That's a crucial point from the sources. They're central to Kurdish music, yes, but they hold this deeply respected position in the culture.
Woven into community life, it sounds like.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Especially in social events. The material gives examples.
Like what?
Well, it notes that in some regions, perhaps where using instruments might be frowned upon for religious reasons.
Okay.
Dance is accompanied directly by singing. And the Stanbeige often leads this.
How does that work?
Often in a call and response pattern, the Stanbeige sings a line or a verse.
And the dancers repeat it.
Exactly. So it's not just background music. It's active participation, binding the performer to the community ritual.
Truly integrated. Now, the sources also make distinctions between the Stanbeige and other key figures in Kurdish oral tradition, right?
Yes. The material lays out sort of three main pillars of classical Kurdish oral performance.
Okay. Who are they?
You have the Sirokbej. Those are the storytellers?
Sirkish storyteller.
Then the Dengbeige, often called bargs, or literally voice singers.
Dengbeige, we've heard that term before.
And then the Stanbeige, who are generally described as maybe more popular or traditional singers.
So what's the main difference, according to the material we looked at?
Well, the Dengbeige are particularly famous for their unaccompanied singing. It's often described as sung speech.
Right, very powerful voice focus.
Yes, and they typically recount long epic tales, historical events, tragic love stories, often with incredible detail and vocal artistry.
And the Strandbash.
The Strandbash is more broadly linked to melodic songs, covering a wider range of themes, perhaps, and styles.
But the line isn't always sharp.
Exactly. The material acknowledges it can be fluid. Sometimes the terms might overlap, or they're discussed together as part of the broader oral arts spectrum. The Strandbash is often described as a kind of minstrel figure, you know?
A traditional singer, whose music might go along with storytelling or other social events.
Precisely.
Which brings us to a really critical aspect highlighted in the sources, their role as essentially living archives.
This is arguably their most vital historical function. For centuries, Kurdish culture, history, literature, values, it was mainly passed down orally.
Because written records weren't widespread or were suppressed?
Exactly. So, without lots of literacy or official institutions preserving texts, figures like the Strandbash, the Dengbash, the Chirakbash, they were the archives.
Holding all that knowledge.
Memorizing and transmitting folklore, epics, poems, history, generation after generation.
And the material really stresses how crucial this became when the Kurdish language itself was under attack.
Absolutely critical. The songs, the stories weren't just entertainment. They were containers encoding cultural memory, history, identity.
This wasn't just a preference for oral tradition then. It was a necessity.
It was often a direct result of history. Lack of official language recognition, policies of forced assimilation, especially in places like Turkey.
Right.
The material points out that in the early Turkish Republic, Kurmanji basically survived in rural areas, largely because of Dengbash and also mullahs.
Who kept the oral traditions going.
Yes. They managed to avoid the worst of the state bans on written and public Kurdish.
That's incredible. So for a Strandbash just singing in Kurdish, it wasn't just singing a song.
No, it became an act of linguistic preservation, of guarding cultural identity.
It automatically took on a political layer, even with a simple tune.
It certainly could. It turned these cultural figures into symbols of resilience, even resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Their repertoire, whether it was an old ballad or a song about village chores, became this vital piece of intangible heritage, actively pushing back against erasure.
Let's talk more about that repertoire. What kinds of songs are we talking about based on the material?
It described as really wide-ranging. Songs based on history, epic tales, lyrical poems, even literary works set to music.
Any specific genres mentioned?
Yes. The sources mention some key folklore genres. Laics, for instance.
Yeah.
Those are heroic ballads. Often about legendary figures like Saladin is given as an example.
Okay, heroic ballads.
And Hayrans. These are typically love ballads, often quite poignant or melancholy.
Hayrans, love ballads.
Now, the material notes these two are strongly associated with Dengbash.
But Strandbash sing them too.
Well, as popular singers, Strandbash perform a really diverse mix of melodic songs, drawing from these traditions but also going beyond them.
And you mentioned songs for chores? Functional songs.
Yes, the material notes those too. Songs tied directly to village life. Drawina for harvesting.
Drawina?
Sorkutan for grinding bulgur.
Sorkutan.
And Korshalin for working with clay. And seasonal songs too, like Paizok for autumn.
It connects the music right to the rhythm of daily life. That's fascinating.
It does.
And Kurdish dance is so well known. Are there specific songs linked to dances?
The material confirms that connection. It says there are hundreds of distinct Kurdish dances, and many have their own specific songs.
Any examples given?
It cites Chimeri and Helpark as types of these dance song forms.
Okay. And musically, what are they like? Did the sources describe the melodies or structure?
Generally, yeah. Traditional Kurdish songs, both Stran and the Sorani Gorani, are often described as having relatively simple melodies.
Simple how?
Sometimes using only, say, four or five notes within a fairly limited range.
Okay.
And structurally. Often two verses, maybe with a consistent meter. Frequently 10-syllable lines are mentioned.
And where would you typically hear a Strandbash perform, traditionally?
Traditionally, it was in intimate communal settings. Village gatherings, definitely weddings.
Makes sense.
And also Shivbeherk.
Shivbeherk.
Yeah, these are night gatherings, often seen as important venues for performing classical music.
And the music there served multiple roles.
Absolutely. Strengthening social bonds, passing on knowledge, providing entertainment, expressing emotion, all of it.
But that traditional context has obviously changed a lot.
Huge changes. The material points that out clearly. Urbanization, different social dynamics, technology.
So now they perform where?
Increasingly on modern stages, at big festivals,
yeah,
on TV shows.
And instruments. Dengbej are often unaccompanied, but Strongbej.
Right, well, Dengbej are known for that powerful a cappella style.
Yeah.
Strongbej, singing more melodic strand, are more likely to have instrumental accompaniment.
What kind of instruments?
The material lists quite a range, traditional ones. Plucked strings like the tambour or saz, and the bizik.
Okay, saz.
Wind
okay.
instruments like kurnet or duduk, the bilur or kaval, and the simsha.
Duduk, I know that sound.
Bowed instruments like the kuzeli in Kemenz.
Yeah.
And percussion, of course, in def, zern, dahol.
Def, dahol, the drum and pipe, essential for dances often.
Exactly. The specific lineup would vary a lot by region and song type, naturally.
Adds so much texture. Did the sources mention anything about vocal styles differing by region?
They did touch on that. One interesting point highlighted was a tendency among some Kurmanji singers, especially when improvising,
yes,
to try and fit a large number of words into a single musical phrase, like really dense text delivery.
Okay, packing it in.
Yeah. And the material notes this specific trait is maybe less common in certain Sorani styles, like from Sulaimaniya or Kirkuk, though you might find it in Erbil.
Little nuances showing the diversity within the tradition.
Exactly.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Rojbash, Hannah.
Rojbash. Ah, fantastic timing.
Perfect. Let's see. Ah, this chai smells wonderful today. How is it?
Very good. Smooth.
Yeah, it's lovely today. Just right, not bitter at all. Perfect. Okay, quick chai break then.
This is good.
Right, feeling refreshed. Shall we pick back up?
Absolutely. We were talking about how the Strongbej tradition has evolved, right?
Yes, how this ancient role carries on into the modern world.
Well, the material touches on the deep historical roots of Kurdish music. It suggests possible links way back, maybe even to the Hurrian period.
Wow, ancient.
And mentions figures like Ziryab in the wider context of the Islamic Caliphate's musical history.
Though tracing a direct line for the specific Strongbej role might be complex.
Exactly. It's nuanced.
Mm-hmm.
But the long tradition of singers preserving Kurdish songs is undeniable.
And the sources definitely highlight specific people who were crucial in keeping the tradition alive, especially under pressure.
They certainly do. Karapetish Aso is mentioned.
An Armenian musician.
Yes, celebrated in the material for preserving so many traditional Kurdish melodies in the 20th century through recordings and performances. Really significant.
Karapetish Aso. Okay, who else?
Mehmet Şakso, noted as a master of symbolic, nationalistic lyrics.
And face consequences for it.
Yes, his powerful political expression through song led to him being imprisoned multiple times, according to the sources. It shows the real risks involved.
A stark reminder.
Aram Tigran is also mentioned as another key figure carrying that heritage forward.
So these individuals really safeguarded the cultural memory.
They absolutely did, embodied that dedication.
So where does that leave the Strongbej tradition today? Is it still active?
Oh, very much so. It's not just history, it's dynamic. The material explicitly mentions a contemporary artist named Strongbej Yusuf.
Using the title Strongbej.
Yes, actively using the title. It cites his albums Tukani, Goven, Dutchirsum Daye, and notes they're available on modern platforms like GeoSavin and Tidal.
The fact that someone uses the title today really speaks to its ongoing relevance.
It absolutely does.
And clearly, new media digital platforms must have had a huge impact.
Massive. Transformative. Mm-hmm. Platforms like YouTube, Spotify, Instagram, they've given Kurdish music unprecedented global reach.
Connecting artists with audiences everywhere.
Exactly. The material mentions artists like Aynur Dosan.
A very well-known name.
Right. Described as a significant representative for Kurdish people, blending traditional folk with Western sounds. And Chuan Hako, noted for using social media effectively, they can connect globally now.
Transcending geography. That must change things fundamentally.
It introduces entirely new dynamics. Global connection, wider preservation, appreciation. Huge positives.
But potential downsides, too.
The material notes those as well. Risk of decontextualization, you know. Hearing the music totally outside its original community setting.
Losing some meaning.
Potentially. And also commercial pressures. The global music market might influence artistic choices in ways that move away from tradition.
A complex picture. And critically, the sources remind us, despite this global reach, despite the adaptability, being a Kurdish singer can still be incredibly dangerous.
This is such an important, sobering point from the material. It mentions the tragic, accidental death of Juan Hassan.
Known as the voice of G.A. Kermank.
Yes. And even more starkly, it highlights the ongoing imprisonment of the singer Nudim Durak in Turkey.
Still imprisoned.
Since 2015, yes. On charges that material links to promoting propaganda, essentially for singing in Kurdish.
Just for singing in her language.
The material mentions the hashtag Free Nudim Durak campaign. These examples are powerful reminders of the very real political risks.
Which connects directly to how the sources trace this whole history through periods of intense political struggle, right? The fight for identity.
Absolutely. The history of the Strandbej in Kurdish music is inseparable from the political history of the Kurds. The material details periods of severe censorship, language bans.
Particularly in Turkey.
Yes, the official ban on Kurdish in public and private life from 1925 to 1991 is noted, with restrictions continuing even after. It was deliberate state policy aimed at assimilation.
And during those times, the oral tradition, the Strandbej, the Dengbej, became a lifeline.
A critical lifeline. Maintained by these figures, often in rural areas away from direct state control, it was essential for the survival of the language and culture when formal expression was impossible.
It's striking how the sources suggest this suppression almost backfired, in a way, making the art an even stronger symbol.
It absolutely did, paradoxically. Just performing in Kurdish, singing traditional songs, writing new ones with maybe subtle, maybe overt national themes, these became acts of defiance, cultural affirmation.
Taking a stand simply by singing.
Yes. The material notes how Dengbej music, for example, became highly politicized, a potent symbol of Kurdish nationalism versus Turkish nationalism. The very act of singing turned into what the sources call a battleground for survival.
Elevating the significance beyond just art. Now, the material also introduces a concept called heritagization. What's that about in this context?
Heritagization, as the sources discuss it, is basically the process of formalizing traditions like Dengbej or Strandbej, codifying them, promoting them as distinct forms of Kurdish cultural heritage.
Okay, defining it as official heritage.
Right. But the material stresses this happens in a very politicized landscape. It involves complex, often contested debates.
Debates about what?
About what counts as authentic Kurdish culture. Who gets to define it? Who represents it?
And this is influenced by different groups.
Yes, the sources point to several forces. The Kurdish political movement itself, obviously, but also state policies.
Like in Turkey.
Yes, things like Turkey's strategy of liberal multiculturalism. The sources suggest this might risk depoliticizing the culture.
How so?
By framing it just as quaint folklore, stripping it of its political history and context. And even international funding for cultural preservation plays a role.
So Strandbej today is navigating all of this.
They're operating right in the middle of this complex field of cultural politics. Their art is deeply embedded in these ongoing negotiations about power, identity, authenticity.
Yet, despite all these pressures, all these complexities, the material really emphasizes the resilience here.
Unmistakably. The resilience of Kurdish music, of its performers, is highlighted again and again as remarkable. It shows this deep, unwavering commitment to keeping the culture going against huge odds. That comes through very clearly in the material.
And all this richness, this complexity, it's attracting scholarly attention now.
It certainly is. The study of Strandbej, Dengbej, Kurdish music, generally. It's a growing field. Draws from ethnomusicology, cultural studies, anthropology, sociology.
What are scholars looking at specifically?
Various things mentioned in the material. The role of oral tradition in preserving language against assimilation, obviously.
Hmm.
Performance practices, song structures, instruments.
The basics.
Right. But also cultural studies seems very focused on that link between music, identity, and politics.
How music expresses nationalism or builds community.
Exactly. How it shapes collective memory, mobilizes people, especially in diaspora or under oppression, and that analysis of heritagization, how it's shaped by political agendas, memory, the desire for recognition, that's central too.
What kinds of questions are researchers asking, according to the material?
The sources mention several key ones, like how is Kurdishness actually defined and performed through music in contested places like Turkey? How do activists use music to perform that identity?
Interesting.
Also, the impact of modernity, displacement, globalization on these traditions, and gender dynamics too, for instance. The material mentions research asking if framing Dengbej as non-political heritage might maybe unintentionally, open up space for female performers.
That's a subtle point. And what are some of the findings coming out of this research?
Well, the material points to findings showing musicians are really fundamental in creating and sustaining a Kurdish activist public sphere, especially in cities like Istanbul.
So musicians are key actors.
Key actors, yes. And research highlights that paradox in producing heritage we talked about.
Caught between state attempts at folklorization.
Which might aim to depoliticize it under banners like liberal multiculturalism.
And the Kurdish movement seeing culture as inherently political.
Exactly, a tool for self-assertion.
So there's a real tension there
between
how the state might frame it and how the community lives it.
A significant tension. The material notes this. Academic analysis often deconstructs the complexities, the power plays, the potential manipulations.
Right.
While for the community itself, especially when facing hardship, these same traditions often function as powerful, unifying symbols. Sometimes idealized symbols of identity and resilience.
So you need to be aware of both perspectives.
The material stresses that awareness is crucial for a full understanding.
Can we place the Strandbej in a wider global context? Are there similar figures elsewhere?
The material does make some brief comparisons, yeah. It notes that their role, custodian of history, social commentator, transmitter of culture, echoes figures in other oral traditions.
Like who?
Irish bards are mentioned as an example, and West African griots.
Griots, okay. Tell us a bit more about them, based on the material.
The material describes West African griots as these highly respected verbal artists, poet musicians, record keepers. Traditionally, they educate people about history, about genealogies.
Keepers of the past.
Yes, but often shaping those narratives to speak to current issues as well. And similarly, the material notes how Kurdish bards, like Dengbej and Strandbej, have been vital in shaping national identity by performing heroic tales, tragic stories that reinforce collective memory and values.
It really highlights a kind of universal human need, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Putting the Strandbej in that global frame shows this universal reliance on such figures for cultural memory, for social cohesion, for artistic expression.
The Kurdish context is unique, of course.
Absolutely unique. The history, the forms, the specific challenges. But the underlying drive to tell your story, to sing your identity, that's shared.
So studying the Strandbej offers insights into broader issues.
Yeah, the material suggests it provides valuable case studies on things like the role of arts in conflict zones, minority rights, how globalization impacts culture, cultural policy debates, all sorts of things.
So let's try to bring this all together then. From that initial confusing search for Strandbej to this much richer picture, what's the essential takeaway about the Strandbej from our exploration of the material?
I think the key takeaway is that the Strandbej is just a completely pivotal figure in Kurdish culture, especially in the Kurmanji areas.
A singer, first and foremost.
A singer of Strand or Kilam, yes. Distinct from, but closely related to, the Dengbej and Shurukbej. Part of this whole interconnected ecosystem of oral arts.
And their historical role in preservation was absolutely critical.
Hugely important. Historically vital for preserving language, folklore, collective memory, especially when Kurdish faced severe suppression.
And they've shown incredible adaptability.
Remarkable adaptability. Moving from those intimate village settings to global digital stages.
Yet the challenges remain immense.
Undeniably. The material is clear. Political pressure, censorship are still very real dangers. The imprisonment of Nedim Durak is a tragic ongoing example of that.
And the complexities of representing culture globally.
Right, the risks of it being decontextualized, commercialized, folklorized in ways that might strip away deeper meanings, as the academic analysis points out.
It really sounds like they function as that cultural keystone the material mentions.
That's a great way to put it. The Strandbej and these related figures, they aren't on the periphery. They're central, a keystone holding things together in the Kurdish cultural ecosystem.
Embodying tradition and modernity at once.
Exactly. They take ancient practices and make them work in totally new environments, social, political, technological. That constant adaptation is how the tradition survives, by transforming.
Ensuring the old melodies, the old stories keep resonating.
Precisely. Keeping them alive for today.
And the material leaves us with quite a powerful final thought, doesn't it? About the enduring power of this oral artistry.
It really does. Ultimately, the story of the Strandbej, as presented in these sources, is just a profound testament to the power of human artistic expression and cultural memory.
How so?
In their songs, you hear people's history, their joys, their sorrows, their aspirations. It all finds voice there.
Articulating the collective experience.
Yes. Preserving memory against being forgotten, fostering identity, building community, even under the most difficult circumstances imaginable.
It really does underscore a fundamental human need.
It truly does.
Yeah.
The tradition of the Strandbej shows us that universal need to understand our world, connect with each other, connect with our past.
And assert our existence through art.
Exactly. Through creating and sharing art. The specific forms, the unique Kurdish challenges are theirs, but that fundamental drive to create, remember, and sing that resonates everywhere.
Thank you for joining us for this archive session exploring the Strandbesh. We hope this exploration of the source material has given you a deeper appreciation for this vital figure in Kurdish culture.
Maybe take a moment to think about the power of oral traditions in cultures all around the world and how figures like the Strandbesh act as crucial guardians, ensuring culture and memory endure.
Until next time on the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.